Today on The Independent, the ACC Network's Eric McLean joins the show to talk about Notre Dame's game against Clemson this past Saturday, to talk about the steps the Irish must take to take the next step under head coach Marcus Freeman. That and more on today's episode of The Independent.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. As a reminder, which we usually say for the end of the show, but we use it at the beginning as a bye week. If you like the show, like, subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We've got the YouTube stream. Please subscribe there. Helps with the visibility of the show. Matt, the sun still came up on Notre Dame after the Clemson loss, but as I wrote in my final thoughts, it does feel a little purgatory-ish now the rest of the season, because barring a fortunate or unfortunate bowl draw, depending on how you feel about LSU, if you're a Notre Dame fan, it kind of, and I think this is the one of the harder things to swallow about the season from a Notre Dame point of view, it feels like Notre Dame's next chance to make a big statement probably is going to be in College Station on Labor Day weekend next year.
Yeah, I got some Dabo Tyler from Spartanburg vibes when you just addressed me as Matt, like Tyler. I'm not responsible for the performance.
Matthew.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, there's like how many guys in this team are going to be first round picks next year? Joel? Anyone else?
What? Yeah, one.
So like, I think a bowl game with a fully intact roster, or at least a roster for the most part that's fully intact, could be worth looking forward to, depending on the opponent and assuming you win out and you have a chance to get 10 wins, which again, it's different when it's postseason versus regular season. It's, you know, better late than never, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, they only won 8 in the regular season, 9 overall last year. But I am with you. Like, it's, and you know, Eric McLean, the ACC Network joins us in the show, and you'll hear our conversation with him later. And it was interesting to hear his, you know, quote unquote outsider perspective of like, was that just a wasted opportunity for Notre Dame this year, as far as they finally got the quarterback in and it just didn't really click the way everyone hoped it would. And I think he's right. And not to belabor the point, we've said it several times on the show throughout the year, but you know, this was a year with a veteran team and a quarterback who had been there and done that, with ample opportunity to win 10, 11, maybe even 12 games. I mean, if you look, and we've done this so often with this program for as long as we covered it, right? Where we look at the schedule from the outset, 2012 and 2018 come to mind, and we're like, oh, what a gauntlet that's going to be. And you know, they end up running the table because they were better than we thought we'd be, and because some of the teams they played weren't as good as we thought they'd be. This year, there was a chance for that, right? I mean, you look at the big three at the outset among Ohio State, USC, and Clemson, and two of those three, as it stands today, are a shell of their former selves. And Ohio State, despite being undefeated, is as beatable as they've ever been in the Urban Meyer, Ryan Day combined eras.
Yeah.
And was right there for the taking when Notre Dame played them. And so for that, it's disappointing. I mean, it just, it's hard to not, you know, stress a little bit over what was lost with this season, or the missed opportunity that was, especially when you talk about it as a building block for this era of Notre Dame football under Marcus Freeman. You know, next year's schedule is what it is. Home schedule, though, it's very subpar, right? You're not going to have, you know, the NBC pregame show here twice, right? Or Big Noon kickoff here, right? Like, there's no Ohio State. There's no USC. It's going to be different. And this point, you got to, you know, kind of swallow your pride during the bye week and come out and do to Wake Forest what you're supposed to do and do to Stanford what you're supposed to do. Although, I'll tell you what, Troy Taylor has surpassed any and all reasonable expectation in year one on the farm there. I mean, that's a program that's not going to be down for long. Again, Notre Dame should absolutely beat them, but that's not the like, all right, we can sleep through this 1-3 quarters game. I think a lot of us figured it would be at the outset of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you on that. It does. And look, Notre Dame should be fine against Wake Forest. I think Marcus Freeman, while we're still trying to figure out what, you know, what he is as a head coach, or what are the markers of his program here, they play well at home, and they bounce back from letdowns. It's a home game after a letdown. I would expect Notre Dame to play really well against Wake Forest.
Senior day, there's pride there. I mean,
yeah. It's, you know, look, I mean, Notre Dame, we talked to Eric a little bit about this later in the show, but I do think there are a lot of similarities between between Notre Dame and Clemson. Eric and I all do share one important similarity, but I think that Notre Dame is one of the schools out there that the players on the team, there's some draw to play for the school. And I don't want that to sound like cheesy or schmaltzy or anything, but I think it matters for a lot of people on Notre Dame's roster to play for Notre Dame. I think it matters for a lot of people on Clemson's roster to play for Clemson. So I wouldn't expect there to be sort of this massive checkout from inside the Goog or anything like that. But I also just don't know how much Notre Dame can go out there and prove from here on out. It feels like however you feel about Notre Dame's season is probably not going to change between now and January 1st, unless, they send Brian Kelly back to Baton Rouge after a bare bottom spanking. But I do think like the postseason, it matters, but not in a building block kind of way for next year. It's like if they beat the Athletic, our bowl predictions, we've got Notre Dame in the Royal Quest Bowl, but against Tennessee, I would that would be a very interesting game to me. I'd watch that. I'd be happy to go spend New Year's in Tampa to cover that. I think you could learn quite a bit about Notre Dame's secondary. What that means for Notre Dame's program a year from now, I have no idea. But I just think that it's tough that we're sitting here on November 7th as we record this and think like it might be 10 months before Notre Dame gets a chance to really prove something. I think they could prove something to themselves by winning out, but I don't know how much that matters beyond the bowl game, whatever happens the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting because when you put it that way, Pete, I mean, I think of like on paper, you look at what they did in the 2 weeks leading up to Clemson, right? Like throttle USC, throttle Pittsburgh. Not great football teams, but like look what Pittsburgh's done outside of that game, right? Like they beat Louisville decisively. They gave Florida State a pretty good game a week later, an undefeated Florida State team. USC is still USC. I know, like they just fired Alex Grinch. They're kind of in meltdown mode right now, but like it's a blue blood program. It's a big rival that was undefeated when you beat them. And I think, again, when you talk about regrets and missed opportunities, that's the part where you're like on paper, 58-7 over a Power 5 team. It's really freaking good. Like, this team's – and that was not on their A game by any stretch of the imagination either. So you see what they're capable of and you get excited. But again, in the aftermath of losing three games, a couple of which they had no business losing, if they beat Wake 55-0 or something on senior day, if they beat Stanford 42-10 in the finale and they get to 9-3, that's great. I mean, good for the players on the team and the coaching staff on the team for getting them to perform at their peak in November in the last two games of the year. But like, it's also going to be like, yeah, we knew you could do this. Why didn't you do it against Clemson? Why didn't you do it against Louisville?
It does. And I think that we've probably talked about this and I've written about this, like the line between success and failure of the season probably got crossed over last weekend at Clemson. I'm not saying that like this season, if they go 9-3, is an abject disaster. I think that's too dramatic. But to your point, I think the way you're phrasing it makes the most sense. It just feels like a missed opportunity for people who have followed Notre Dame for a long time. It would remind me a little bit of the 2006 season here.
I figured you're going there, yeah.
Yeah, where like they went 10-3, but it just didn't feel like it had the guts of like the year before when they only went 9-3, but it felt like a more impactful year. This year is just going to sort of feel a little bit empty. If they 10-3 beating an SEC team in a bowl game, I think you would be a fool to say like that season was a failure.
Sure.
But I don't think that you could stand up at the table and say like that season was a success. You're just sort of in this weird purgatory, which that's the term that came to mind was I was writing yesterday, just like it just sort of feels stuck in between.
I mean, it's like they're a better program and they've beaten this program convincingly a lot in recent years, but like It's like a better version of North Carolina right now, right? We're like, man, they look so freaking good. They can beat anybody. Oh, and then they just lose to Georgia Tech, or oh, they just lose to Marshall, or you know, lay an egg in another big game. Like, it's why I was talking to some Carolina people about this earlier last week, and they're like, I didn't even think of it in this realm. North Carolina's had three straight first round draft picks at quarterback, or is going to have three straight first round draft picks at quarterback. What do they have to show for it, right? Like, could be worse as far as like massive disappointment. Yes, Mitch Trubisky was the number two pick in the draft.
It took me a minute to figure out who they were.
It took me a minute too when it was put to me that way. But, or I guess, no, Sam Howell was not a first round pick, but everyone thought he'd be. Either way, five star recruit.
They had Chaz Surratt, who I think was a former North Carolina quarterback who turned into an NFL player, if I'm not mistaken.
He's a linebacker now. He was a linebacker last year at Carolina. His brother Sage was one of Sam's top targets at Wake. I mean, it's disappointing because this was supposed to be the year. Now I will go back to, and you guys will hear this conversation shortly. I thought Eric was fantastic. I thought he was one of the best guests we've had all year. We've obviously had him in the past, but I thought the way he was able to break things down from the perspective of someone who's kind of been there and done that and been part of a climb of building a program was really insightful. The way you'll hear him talk about how and why he committed to Clemson and Dabo Swinney basically by accident, by being on that campus and being around that environment. I think if you're an optimist, you'll hear that and you'll be able to easily picture Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame in a similar mold.
I know I could
with recruits. And let's not forget, like, you know, everyone's, you know, knocking Clemson right now, and understandably so. They had on paper, they had no business ever being as good as they were. And when Dabo got the job, he was an interim head coach who had only coached receivers before. I believe he went 6-7 in his second full year. Everyone was down on the guy, and Clemson doubled down on him. And there was nothing tangible on paper that would make you think this is the right guy for the job, let alone this is the guy who's going to make them for two or three year stretch, arguably the best program in college football. Again, I don't think the parallels are direct between him and Marcus Freeman, but there is that kind of innate feel and buy-in, if you will, where you get in a room with Marcus Freeman, whether you're a media guy, a recruit, administrator, a donor, you name it, like, it's very easy to be impressed and convinced by his vision. Now, ultimately, there has to be some proof in the pudding. But even before Marcus Freeman was the head coach at Notre Dame, I mean, before he was on Notre Dame staff, me and you talked a lot about Clemson envy and how there's something there in Death Valley that feels like it could be replicated at Notre Dame as far as a unique program that, you know, can sell itself in this kind of amorphous concept of culture, and that, you know, may not be the first place on four or five star recruits' radars when they're looking at where to go to college. But the minute they get on campus, they're kind of hooked and think, you know, I want to be a part of this. And to hear Eric McElhain talk about seeing Dabo Swinney interact with players at practice, remind me of the way Jack Swarbrick described his first impressions of Marcus Freeman to me, you know, going to the practice field and seeing this defense coordinator who was, you know, everywhere with everyone, seemed to have a relationship with everyone. And, you know, you mentioned the locker room video when he got hired. It wasn't just the defensive players who were excited about it. It was everyone. And again, it's football, right? It's not about being best friends with everybody. It's not about making everybody happy. But, you know, there is something to that. And, you know, for all the faults that we've seen with this program on the field on Saturdays the first 2 years, this is the bargain you make with yourself when you vote a first-time head coach who's very short on experience. It's a bargain Clemson made with itself. Now, Clemson was not under the pressure Notre Dame is right now. Clemson was not, you know, Dabo was replacing a fired coach, not a coach who left for unquote greener pastures. But I come away from Eric McElhain's conversation with us, and I'm like, not more convinced than ever about this direction, but like I can see the light, so to speak, and I think it's very easily sellable, if you will, if you're Marcus Freeman and this Notre Dame staff.
Yeah, and it's you know, this is something we didn't talk about, Eric, but probably should have. But like the ability of your staff exactly how you want it or need it to be is Marcus's next big challenge. I think that he did a pretty good. I think he did a nice job with his first staff, mixing like inherited and have to go out and find new guys. The process to get to Jared Parker is what it is. We've talked about that ad nauseum, but like Joe Rudolph, I thought was a very good hire at the time.
Thielen,
keeping him and hiring him and keeping him was significant. You know, the decision to go with Chancey Stuckey, I realize the receivers have struggled, but you can see him growing into something as like a really good coach. You got to find the right coordinators. And like, this is true of any program anywhere. Why was Dabo Swinney have the success that he had? Brent Venables.
My timeline might be wrong here, but if I remember correctly, first big hire he made was Chad Morris, who I think had 1 year of college coaching. Mm. He was a high school coach with this innovative Texas spread offense. And from my memory, he hires Chad Morris. Kevin Steele, who's the DC at Alabama right now, it's no spring chicken, basically says, you can't hire this guy. Like, we can't practice against this. This is not the offense we're used to. Like, it's not, you know, this does not mesh. Mm-hmm. And Dabo essentially said, like, you're free to leave. And cut him loose, essentially. Like, he didn't fire him, but like, that was the beginning of the end of that, which also led to the hiring of Brent Venables. And, you know, we'll see what kind of offense approach Notre Dame ultimately goes with next year. I think there will be changes on that staff, but you know, it's in some ways thinking outside the box and trying things that may not be conventional, so to speak.
Yeah.
Chad Morris is not conventional. Like, and even when Chad Morris left, though, he promoted Jeff Scott and Tony Elliott, two guys who would never call play in their life. And that's really when they took off. Now, Sean Watson has a lot to do with that, but yeah.
I know. I think what has the reason Marcus Freeman, I think, can be a success here has very little to do with like play calling. But I am curious after this season about like how he views offense. Like, what do you want this offense to look like? He's talked about offensive line, defensive line driven program. He's talking about how he wants to have tempo, but not major in tempo. Because I think that a common denominator on the big games is like they play it incredibly close to the vest offensively. And I don't know if in 2023 college football, that is what you want to be doing. Although maybe it's
personnel dictated too.
We don't have people on the outside to win, so we have to play it this way. I don't know. I think that's going to be an interesting question.
I mean, look, did you think Tommy Reese would be winning the way he is at Alabama right now? Like with this style? With no offensive line, so to speak, and out-airing LSU? I mean, if you told me going into last week's game, and look, everyone was down on Tommy Reese, particularly Notre Dame after that Texas game mm-hmm. and the USF game, but he's figured it out because he's good at what he does. But if you told me going into that LSU game, it would be 21 and a half. I think, boy, Bama can't keep up with these guys. They're not built that way. And they were, because Jalen Milroe has gotten better throughout the course of the season. They've been able to scheme around the lack of a strong offensive line. And those receivers, while they're not Devontae Smith and Jerry Jeudy and Jalen Waddle, they're still infinitely better than anything he ever had to work with in Notre Dame. Yeah. And they figured it out.
Yeah, I think maybe that's the thing about the offense is like, can you take the ingredients you have and turn it into something that's like greater than the sum of its parts? Like, that's not happening with Notre Dame's offense right now. I think it's now happening with Reese at Alabama, but that's a sign of any good coach in any sport at any level is like, how do you take the material on hand and like make it better than it is? And I think that's been one of the things about Notre Dame's offense. You're just like, it needed to be more than it was, even though, I mean, I tweeted this out on Sunday, I think, like they're on pace to be number two in Notre Dame history in yards per play. And I think they're number six in points per game. And look, Notre Dame.
Now do the home road splits.
Yeah. And people say like, well, what about defensive and special teams touchdowns? Like, well, Notre Dame has been scoring defensive and special teams touchdowns since the beginning of time. So that's kind of a wash, but it just feels like an offense that's like kind of very uneven. And before we get into Eric, I mean, if you were Marcus Freeman, would you change anything significantly during the break? Like, would it be play calling or like who's
during the bye?
During the bye.
Not like schematically speaking, no, because you are who you are and you have what you have. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, again, this is like the head coach's job and it's easy for me to say this, but like, I would do everything I can to make sure my team's prepared at the start of kickoff of the last two games because they didn't really look that way.
Yeah.
At Clemson last week or in, you know, a couple of the road games this year. But like schematically speaking or personnel wise, no, I don't think there's some magic formula to fix this thing, so to speak.
No, I think, and I do think, like said this earlier, they bounce back from setbacks and they play well at home. Like if you keep doing what you're doing, I think you will cruise through these last two games. Well, you'll cruise through Wake Forest and then you'll have to show up against Stanford in a way that I'm not sure I thought they would have to show up at the beginning of the year, because I thought Stanford...
How Stanford always get good receivers, even when they're bad? I mean...
sometimes, in one instance, they take a receiver that Notre Dame didn't want.
Which one was that?
Aomanar.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I didn't...
Yeah, that was... Okay. That was, I had a Notre Dame offer, and they chose not to pursue him as seriously as he wanted to be pursued. So, yeah, that'll be an interesting game at the end to sort of wrap the whole thing up, but... All right, that's enough about Clemson in the past. Let's bring in someone who actually played at Clemson to talk more expertly about that program. Eric did a nice job of drawing some parallels between what's going on there and what's happening in South Bend, both when Dabo got there and what's going on now. So with that note, we'll bring in Eric McClain from the ACC Network.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Hey, Pete, Notre Dame is a bye week this week. You know what's a great way to settle up on the couch Saturday and watch other teams play? Or go around the bonfire and experience some fall activities?
It is homefieldapparel.com all the way. It is the season, and it is the weekend to get comfortable with homefieldapparel.com.
And the great news for our listeners is that first-time customers can get 10% off their first order using code INDEPENDENT23 at checkout. Don't miss out on the most sought-after Irish apparel available today at homefieldapparel.com.
Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit.
We're now pleased to be joined by Eric McClain of the ACC Network. This has become kind of an annual thing of sorts. And Eric, when I texted you last week, you said, only if Clemson wins. I'm tired of talking about this team after a loss every year. And lo and behold, they got the job done, and we got to get
praise
you on
our the show. Lord.
So welcome back, buddy.
Well, I forgot that it was at home. Like, it's one of those things. I forgot that we finally played you guys in Death Valley. It's been so long, but yeah, appreciate you having me. The way that it did here, but good for my Tigers to finally get back in the win column. It's been a long time. Been a long time.
It was, I don't know, going into the game, I was not overly confident in Notre Dame's offense, but when I saw Clemson's injury report, I was like, well, this is like, if you're going to get it done, like this is the weekend to do it. How did, right. What was sort of your pregame vibe check on your alma mater there going before Saturday?
Yeah, really from an outside perspective, I will say, looking at that report, you're just like, who is available? Can we put that out? Actually, can we see who's playing? Because it was just a long list. I mean, you're talking about 10, 11 guys, man. And it's just impactful players, starters, and of course, Walker Parks has been out for a while, but, having three offensive linemen down already with an offensive line that hadn't been playing good, that was going to be interesting. And, I think from their perspective though, really confident, just because of the way the team responded. You know, I think the way that their culture is there, and you hear it from coach after every game. I mean, how close they are, and it's just those turnovers that have been so bizarre. And they tried to give it to y'all. Yeah. And they really did. I mean, Mafah just – that was nuts. It wasn't even like a clean, like, hit. It was just like a finger touched that ball, and there it is on the ground. Wouldn't have been a clean without that. But I do think the guys were excited, obviously, to be back home, to have a team like Notre Dame and a ranked team coming to the house there. So they were ready, but it was just ready or not, here the Irish come, you know, type of vibes. And you know, unfortunately for them, they were ready.
Eric, I mean, you've been in that locker room. You played for Dabo Swinney and a lot of those coaches. Culture is, I think, an overused term in college football, but there is something.
I think it's an incorrect term. I think a lot of people say it but don't have it. I think that's what the deal is.
Well, what's – okay, I was going to say, like, what is it – what's the secret sauce, if you will, with Clemson where they can have a really disappointing season and still not throw in the towel and have a performance like they did last week? Or even 2 years ago, they started off with two or three losses. They still end up winning 10 games. They're not what they were when you were there, but it's not a broken program by any stretch of imagination. Why do you think that is?
Yeah. You know, I do think it's just the overwhelming belief in each other, you know, and the system that's in place and the coaching staff that's in place, particularly Coach Dabo Swinney, and just knowing that, you know, they've got each other's backs. You know, I think that's something where a lot of teams, you get in this situation and guys start looking at the portal, guys start not wanting to get hurt for the NFL. All these different things start to creep into, you know, other folks' minds. And just like you said, 2 years ago, I thought that was about to happen. I mean, because this was kind of the first time that Clemson hadn't had that great success. They're used to going to the playoff. They're used to winning ACC championships, I think 7 in a row, 6 or 7 playoff appearances in a row. And so that was the first strike of adversity. And you're like, what's about to happen? Because complacency is a real thing. And that happens, and that creeps into locker rooms. And they didn't. And so after that, that was kind of a great – you know, I think reminder to everybody that what they have built there is built to last. And I think, you know, now the adversity they've gone through since then, you know, pick your adversities when you can, you know, and to go through these, you know, down seasons, quote unquote, they're just staying together. And it's very impressive to see that in a time like this where, you know, there is a lot of me going around, but these guys stick to the plan. They stick to the course and, you know, they find ways to win. This was big. I mean, seriously, if we're talking about a 4-5 Clemson team right now, that hadn't happened in a long time. And I can't even imagine just kind of the, you know, the mindset that you have in that locker room of what's going, like, what are we doing? But they didn't. They got it done. They rallied together. Great defensive, like, opportunistic, you know, really performance here. They gave up a ton of chunk plays, which was weird, you know, because I hadn't seen Clemson do that in a long time. But at the end of the day, they took the ball away when they needed to, scored, you know, on defense, and ultimately got it done.
I was interested from a micro perspective where you felt like Clemson maybe overachieved a little bit on Saturday, or maybe played above what they had the previous 8 games. And like, I would definitely start with their offensive line because yeah. I thought Mills and Cross, 99 and 56, were going to have a day. And yes. they were very good in the second half. Like, I think they sort of figured some things out, but not the way Clemson was stubborn offensively with mm-hmm. their run game and how efficient they were on the line was not something I really saw coming. I don't know if that was something that caught you off guard as well.
100%. I mean, you know, kind of as we, you know, we're a little bit joking about, but when you saw those two guards going in, a true freshman and a young, inexperienced guy in Howard going in at left guard, you're just like, okay, good luck. You know, well, let's see what happens. I guess they're going to try to get out in space and try to roll the pocket and throw the ball a lot. And they didn't do that at all. I mean, they went right at Notre Dame. And I think even it was a bit of a schematic change in the fact that they didn't do a lot of gap scheme, which I had seen that a ton all year with pulling tackles, pulling center guard. They just went straight up zone, inside, outside, and ran that probably – Mafah had 36 carries. 30 of those were probably some sort of zone mm-hmm. where it's a direct handoff, not a zone read. It's just, hey, we're going to go this way. Join us. And I thought that worked really well. And, you know, to see those young guys was very inspiring from a Clemson perspective and the way that they played. Again, I mentioned the true right guard in Sewell there. I mean, that was fantastic. I hadn't seen that type of consistency all year from Clemson. So for them to be able to do that was great. And then, I mean, obviously, Mafah is a huge part of that. I mean, his jump cutting ability, the way that he really got in rhythm, was impressive, and just his vision. So Clemson's going to be in an interesting spot, because obviously you have Will Shipley, when, if ever, he gets back healthy and ready to go, who is such a vital piece of your team from a leadership, production, all these different things. But I would say Mafah's a better true running back. So does that maybe now allow you to use him in a different way? It's going to be fascinating. They're going to have an opportunity on their hands. I'll call it that.
What was Notre Dame's kind of expectation versus reality in your mind, as far as, again, I texted you last week, you didn't sound all that confident reading between the lines. Sure. I'm not sure too many in Clemson did.
I don't know who would have.
Tyler from Spartanburg, apparently.
Right.
What did you expect to see from that Notre Dame football team, and what do you think Clemson did a good job of taking away from it?
Yeah, you know, I definitely thought the run game would be, it's hard to say it wasn't efficient. I mean, they rushed for 183 yards and two touchdowns. But again, a lot of that was chunk plays. I thought there would be a little bit more of Audric just running down their throat. I mean, similar to last year. I don't remember what his numbers were. I know they ran for maybe like 260. It was something crazy. And maybe thought just a little bit more of that, just because that's what they do at the end of the day. It's what Notre Dame, when they're at their best, they're running the football. Sam has been in a weird slump, you know, these last couple of games, you know, throwing picks, hasn't gotten into the end zone. Even again in that Pitt win, I mean, a massive win. And if I would have looked at Sam Hartman's stat line, I would have said Notre Dame lost, and they won by 51. I mean, that's just crazy when you see the special teams' defensive effort and all of that. So, you know, I probably thought he would have been a little bit more efficient. I know a lot of people want to make of the 0-5, which obviously it's significant. It's a statistic, but I thought he would come in there and really want to be guns blazing and kind of accelerate that. But not having your tight end, your best, you know, pass catcher, I know that hurts. And just I don't know, that receiving core. I'm looking at the stats here. I mean, the second leading receiver was your running back. I mean, that's hard. It's hard to win when that's the case. And it's not by design, I don't think, necessarily. So I probably thought that they would be a little bit more efficient offensively. And then just defense, you know, like we said, with all those injuries, I mean, I thought it was going to be very hard for Clemson to run the ball. And that just wasn't the case at all.
Do you think that this was, or should be, like a sobering moment for kind of Notre Dame fan base when you look at, okay, how Hartman played against Clemson last year with Wake and how he played against them this year? Same quarterback, different receivers, different pass game. Like, I don't think Notre Dame fans like to say, wait a minute, Wake Forest has better receivers than we do, but I'm not really sure what other conclusion you could draw based on the disparity in stats.
Well, I mean, Wake Forest got better receivers than a lot of people. That's what I think people, you know, need to understand. Those guys are freaky. And, you know, it's unfortunate, just to briefly talk about Wake here, that they can't get more consistent out of their quarterback play, because they are good. I mean, and it's, I don't want to say it's wasting talent, but it's guys like right there that, you know, if they're at Notre Dame, if they're at Clemson, I mean, these are ballers. These are guys that are up the ranks and, you know, receiving numbers in the country. And unfortunately, they just can't be utilized to the fullest. So I think it's something that obviously needs to be addressed. Now, if Chris Tyree comes back for another year, I think that could be really fun, you know, being in that position for a couple of years. But I don't think there's any question that you need to go to the portal. You need to get guys, or at least grow guys up faster, that can make a difference, that can get separation, that can be that go-to target. Because what would we say, that Rico's probably the best one, and a true freshman? That's a lot to bear, you know, especially at a place like Notre Dame.
Yeah, no, I think you could have an argument about a couple of those guys, and none of them would be all that inspiring given what you've seen so far this year. I made the joke before, but what did you think about Tyler from Spartanburg, and who do you think was behind that? Because I guarantee you ops directors around the country are looking for their version of it. Yeah, for blue bloods that are not exactly guns blazing into November right now.
Yeah, whatever you have to do, right? No, I think it was just a disgruntled fan, man, that somehow got through the phone lines. First of all, I don't know who let him on air.
For 2.5 minutes. Like, it was like...
Well, here's my thought about that. I think when he kind of... When he compared Coach Sweeney to Bowden, I'm sure they were like going to dump it, and Dabo just raises up his finger. He's like, no, let him finish. I'm about to just destroy this kid. And, you know, he's allowing him to say whatever. Yeah, Tyler, whatever he wants to say. And honestly, you know, what's crazy about it is there was probably some valid questions in there. But when you attack a man's faith, when you attack a man's worth, you're attacking his character, his program. What do you expect to get, you know, except for the horns? And that's what he did. So, I don't think that necessarily juiced the team, or, you know, they're not playing that in the facility. Everybody's like, yeah, we got to do this for that guy. But, you know, if I heard somebody talking about my coach, I mean, I'm going to do everything I can to defend him. So maybe a sliver of added motivation there.
There's because it's an open air press box, you get a little bit more of the chatter from the fan base down at Clemson.
Oh, sure.
There were a few Tyler from Spartanburgs
in the section
front of me when Klubnik was throwing that sort of like reverse pass type thing. There were some gripes in there that were legit, but the approach, man, was just way off.
That's right.
way off. This is kind of like a big picture-y type question, but like I do think that if Notre Dame was going to model itself and after a program that's sort of been to the mountaintop in the last 15 years, it's Clemson. There was a time when Dabo Swinney was not Dabo Swinney, where he was a first-time head coach, and people are like, "Yeah, is this working out?" Are there any takeaways from a Clemson point of view that might be like food for thought for a Notre Dame fan right now when they're looking at Marcus and being like, okay, I'm not sure how I feel about this.
Yeah. You know, I think what's interesting is it all takes time, right? And unfortunately that isn't always a commodity, especially in a place like Notre Dame that is, whether you want it or not, always going to be in the central of the spotlight just because of who they are, how they do things, what they do, what they've done. And, you know, unfortunately, things have to be sped up and there's a process that is going to be accelerated there. And so I do think that obviously a great recruiter, a great man, has the locker room. And when you look at him from the perspective of the resources that you have and the ability that you have to not instantly but quicker – go out and get talent in this transfer portal. I think that because of all those things, the entire process is sped up. So for me, man, I think, you know, just please be patient, you know, give a guy time, but you know, the time does come where you've got to move on and don't get too far behind this thing, which I don't think Notre Dame is there. But you guys tell me, because you have a guy like Sam Hartman and you probably are thinking this is the piece, this is what we need. We need to get to the playoff, and then maybe the surrounding cast isn't what we thought it would be, and maybe it feels like a little bit of a waste. I'm not sure. I think he's definitely been great for Notre Dame and amazing. I don't know what you would be without him, but it does to me feel like, is this why we came here, to go 7-3? And it's a little bit weird.
No, we hit on this point in our last show, and I'm completely with you, Eric. I mean, you could count Duke is a tangible win that you don't get with a quarterback other than Sam Hartman with the way he played on the stretch. But other than that, and I'm not dismissing the good stuff he's done in blowouts, but
sure,
you know, you came into this season. I mean, you were a play away from beating Ohio State. If you beat Ohio State, you're probably in the playoff race, or at least, you know, playing better the rest of the way undefeated. So it does feel like a missed opportunity. No question about that. It's like Pete brought up, you know, the comparisons. And I believe Pete, Jack Swarbrick told you when at Marcus Freeman's introductory press conference, Dabo Swinney was kind of like a muse or inspiration for like the modern coach and how to recruit better and be more player friendly.
So more like a head coach of culture.
Right.
Right.
Than
that word
head coach of like, I have a whiz bang playbook.
Well, and I bring that up because Eric, you committed to Clemson, I mean, very early in Dabo's tenure, like before they were the Clemson that, you know, Tyler from Spartanburg would get upset about. I mean,
that's right.
Take us back through that recruitment, who else you were looking at and how Dabo and some of the other guys on staff ultimately sold you there.
Yeah. So I was actually committed to the University of Tennessee for a long time and grew up in Knoxville. You know, my dad got out of the Air Force when I was born, got back in when the towers fell. But for 10 years, I lived right there. And my mom and her whole side of the family went to Tennessee outside of her mother, who's an Alabama grad. But everybody else. And so that's where I was always wanting to go. You know, wanted to run through the tee and, you know, play in Neyland and all these different things. And so I was committed there, Taj Boyd and myself, which is hilarious, to Philip Fulmer. And, you know, then they fired him after, I think, a 10-win season, which is just crazy. And Lane Kiffin came in, and I'm sure you guys are very familiar, but he just wasn't ready for that. You know, he wasn't ready to be a head coach and pretty immature the way he did different things. And I just didn't. It was such a culture shock of difference that when I met him, I was just like, I don't think this is for me. And that broke my heart, you know, because I wanted to go there so badly. And so a guy on the staff with Coach Fulmer was Dan Brooks, one of the best defensive line coaches ever. When they got fired, he got hired by Coach Sweeney. And he waited until, you know, I had decommitted from Tennessee. And then he hit me up and said, hey, Eric, you know, I'm at Clemson now. Would love for you to come and visit. I saw you decommitted. I'm like, Clemson, coach, what is Clemson? Like, y'all had no clue. Well, it's because I grew up in SEC country. I was either going to, you know, Alabama or Tennessee, you know, Tennessee my whole life. And so we're doing that. He's like, oh, we're in the ACC, this and that. And I'm like, what? Like, where? South Carolina? No, I'm not doing that. Sorry. And so, you know, doing the whole thing. Penn State, Ohio State, back to Tennessee because Derek Dooley, the lawyer's there, and you know, down to Auburn, Alabama, and then kind of coming back home. He calls me after we're leaving Auburn and he goes, hey, you know, I heard you're at Auburn. We lived in Fayetteville, North Carolina at the time. And he says, listen, you have to go right near Clemson on the way home. Why don't you just stop by? It'd be great to see you. So we're like, okay, this is spring going into my junior year. And we're like, okay, you know, we'll come by. Well, it'll be great to see you, coach. You know, don't really care about, you know, anything else. And so we go, and I'm doing research on the way because I promise y'all, I have no clue anything about Clemson. Never heard of it, ever. And, you know, we're pulling off 85, exit 19B, and I start seeing these little paw prints on the road. And, you know, the sun's setting. We're getting there late, and it's purple and orange. I'm like, what is happening? Like, where are we? And, you know, all those schools, or a lot of those schools I just mentioned, they're big cities, right? Like it's skyscrapers and all these different things around their big towns. And we're passing cornfields and cow pastures. I'm just like, what is this? This is nuts. And, you know, we're looking at the GPS and, you know, it says 2 minutes from the stadium as I'm literally on Perimeter Road driving by a sunflower field. I'm just like, there's not a stadium that's about to come out of here. And then just out of the trees, man, Death Valley just rips out. And I'm getting goosebumps talking about this. And then I met Coach Sweeney, and it was so bizarre. Like he was nobody. He had just got the job. I mean, he was a wide receiver coach. Like who, what, Dabo? What's his name? And, you know, never been a head coach, never been a coordinator. And, so we're looking this up. Like, I mean, I'm going to commit to this school because this guy's going to be gone. You know, he's not going to be here. So I really need to know about the school. And then I meet him, and just the undeniable passion for the game of football, for Clemson, you know, the love that he had for his players. I mean, we're at spring practice. I'm watching this. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, this is really weird from the Urban Meyers and the Nick Sabans and the Derek Dooleys, you know, all these different guys. And I just wanted to be a part of it. It was so contagious so quickly that I knew that this was the place that I wanted to go. So it went from very quickly knowing nothing, stopping for an hour to say hello to Coach Brooks, to we stayed for 3 days, did everything. I mean, I picked it apart to I wanted to not go there, and just fell in love so quickly. And then, you know, fast forward 5 years later, it was amazing. Crazy journey.
It is, having actually seen a little bit of Clemson's campus for the first time, cause it wasn't a monsoon this year. Right. It's pretty nice, but you're right. Cool, it is spot. When I'm parking, I'm like, where's the stadium?
It's crazy because they got y'all over there in the gravel pit. Like, you got to get away.
It's a little bit of a waste. It sneaks up on you. Walk by the cemetery and then like, oh, there it is.
That's right. Hey, speaking of that cemetery, my in-laws will be buried there one day. See, I'm glad you got to see that.
Oh, okay. All right. Under construction. Looked like a big renovation project.
Uh-oh, oh, no. Not to make light of it, I thought you were talking about outside their Six Flags facility. They have tombstones of every big win they have, like Alabama championship, right. Oklahoma playoff. I wonder if Tyler from Spartanburg's radio career will go right there.
He's in there. He's in there. He's going to be in there.
Yeah, it's it definitely has a good culture about it. And it, yeah, I guess with what about Dabo early on? I'm kind of like grasping at a Marcus Freeman comparison here, but like, what about him made you think like, all right, this guy might not know everything he needs to know to be a head coach, but this is a guy I want to follow. And I think back to like the locker room video when Marcus was hired, like those players wanted to follow Marcus Freeman. What was this is pre social media, I think in some ways, but like, what was it about Dabo early on that made you want to follow him, even if things weren't running smoothly?
Yeah. I think again, just his, you could tell that he cared, man. And that was something, yeah, I don't know how or why I'm blessed with it, but I just have a pretty good judge of character. You know, and just the first moment I met him, the way that he shook my hand, the way that he addressed my mother, the way that he addressed the team, and, you know, watching him after practice, what is he doing? Is he just going to the office, you know, whatever? No, he's talking with everybody, you know, having little kids there. I mean, the family's there. There were so many things that he cared about so much more what was happening off the field that he knew that if that was the case, everything on the field would take care of itself. And that was just really important to me, man, that he cared about developing me as a person in society. He cared about developing me as a future husband, as a future father. And he knew X's and O's. Like, if I could get through all that, X's and O's would be fine. And so to me, man, it was so evident that when a guy loves you like that, you'll do anything for him. And so now I'm sprinting harder. I'm lifting heavier weights. I'm trying to, you know, just be a better person for him. Like, I don't want to disappoint that guy because everything that he's done for me. So, you know, I think that was something that was just, again, so evident when I was there, you know, on this trip. And then, of course, as a player, I mean, everything you see is what you get. That dude is just how he is on Twitter or you know, TikTok, whatever, is how he is in the meetings, in the locker room, and all that stuff. So it was. And I don't want to discount anybody else, because obviously there's great coaches out there, but he was so different from anyone else that I'd ever met.
How has that dynamic changed or evolved with the seat you're in right now? Because, I mean, let's face it, they haven't had the best couple seasons relative to their expectations. Yeah. You've had to be critical at times, you know, in a professional manner. Has that guys bumped heads anyway over that or anything like that? I know some of your colleagues have with him, but, sure. You know, how's that dynamic been? You know, just being in as a broadcaster now.
Yeah, you know, I think what is different, you know, just about myself and EJ and Eddie and Coach and previously Jordan Cornette, you know, we've been there. Like, we've played and coached and been in those situations. And I think the one thing that we take a lot of pride in is we're critical to situations, not to players, not to kids. You know, you can criticize a coach, they get paid millions of dollars, you can do that. But we're not attacking, and the way that we say things, I think, is important. And if you can, you know, get past sometimes emotion, especially with me and these guys. But if you can just talk about situations and what you saw in a manner that is, number one, educational for other people. But number two, not taking it past criticism. Like, I think there is a difference when it sounds like there's an agenda and when it sounds like there's something that, you know, you're trying to either be too negative, or just flat out, you know, being a jerk. I mean, I think there's a difference between that. And, you know, there is a line that you can get to. And, you know, I don't think that any of us have ever crossed that.
What the kind of last thing for me, but like just big picture takeaways on Notre Dame moving forward. We talked about Sam, Marcus, I mean, the program at large. Like, do you feel like they're, is there, you look at them as like they're a missing piece, or more of like they've got some serious building they need to do as a program to sort of get where they want to go?
Yeah, I think maybe pieces. I don't know if it's significant, but I think pieces. And I think you could say the same thing where Clemson is right now. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about a national powerhouse and getting back to, you know, making playoffs and being in New Year's Six bowls, you know, that's important to have the best of the best. It's hard to win. When you don't, you know, and when you're having to scheme up and everything has to go just right. So I don't think so. I think you're right there. And you know, what is it in the portal? Addressing needs, you know, wide receiver, probably number one, you know, depending on how many offensive linemen you need. Do you go out and get a guy, or do you feel comfortable with the guys you have in the wing? So roster management right now is at an all-time high and such a, you know, just an interesting piece of this thing, because you do have that ability to go out and get whatever you need right now. You don't have to wait on this, you know, 18-year-old kid to come in and then develop. And then, yeah, he's going to be really good. But to supplement that time, you know, you have that opportunity now. So I do not think it's some big, massive overhaul, you know, that needs to occur for Notre Dame at all.
I'll get you out of here on this, Eric. Wake Forest after the bye for Notre Dame. And then Stanford, which next year will be an ACC opponent. ACC expansion, Stanford, Cal, and SMU. SMU is actually really damn good this year, but you're kind of the face of this ACC network now. What how do you feel about all this? How's this going to work? And do you have any insight on how this will affect Notre Dame's 5-game-a-year arrangement? Because we still have yet to get clarity from anyone on does Stanford count as an ACC non-conference opponent now or not? Yeah.
Well, I do have the Notre Dame contract right here. If you guys want to send it over, just tell me who can sign it, and we can make this an even number and make it great.
New AD in a couple months. Better
luck.
That's
right. We'll get it to him. We'll get it to him. See how we can persuade him. I'm sure he's been very well coached on that. You know, it's interesting, man, because I think, you know, at the time I was just like, how does this help? You know, what does this do? Does this get you excited about competition level? What is the main purpose? And I think what we found is it's a numbers game, right? Especially when you're talking about the league itself and the different things there. So there is safety in numbers and going out and getting a couple of new markets. I think California will be, you know, fun to have that in kind of your repertoire there. And of course, Dallas, I mean, a massive market there. And I think SMU, as you just said, I think they can be pretty good pretty fast, especially when you see the money that is coming in and out of there. The things that they're able to do, how they're raising the money. I mean, they said, "Nah, we're good on the TV rights. Just let us come in. Yeah. We'll handle the rest of that." That's incredible. I think Coach Rhett Lashley, as you mentioned, doing an unbelievable job there. I think they can be middle of the pack, upper middle quickly, just because of, again, having that market in Texas, all that talent, and then being able to pull guys in, say, "Hey, we're in the ACC now. We're playing, you know, in this big boy football. Come join this party with the transfer portal." So I'm excited about it for that aspect of it. Obviously, the other sports, the great things that'll entail, kind of a headliner, Stanford women's basketball. I mean, that's amazing to add that into the best conference, you know, and when you talk about basketball, men's and women's, for sure women right now. So I certainly think there's the advantages of it. Travel is going to continue to be a thing. It sounds like they've kind of, you know, got their hands wrapped around it with the way the scheduling has been for at least football. With no one having to go out there multiple times. And it sounds like maybe every, you know, other year you kind of have to make that trip out to California. I am going to be fascinated to see what they do with these Olympic sports. I mean, I don't know if it's, hey, everybody meet in Dallas, we're going to have a little in-season tournament and everybody kind of play, or do you go out there for a couple of days and play multiple? I'm not sure what they're going to do, but that's certainly a concern that I've heard multiple times, you know, from ADs and other people around the athletic department. And then there is that tricky piece of where and when does Notre Dame come into play. So it'll be interesting. The smart people are dealing with that. They get paid to do that. I just report the news and what I hear.
Just like that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Eric, thanks for hopping on with us on The Independent. I can recommend Stanford as another nice campus to visit. So
Make sure
you get to take your show on the road there at some point whenever the opportunity arises. So appreciate you joining us here on The Independent.
No doubt. Appreciate you guys.
That was Eric McLean from the ACC Network. We thank him for joining us. A lot of great insight there. No predictions this week, Pete, because there's another off week this late in the season. Reminder to our listeners, we will not be recording this weekend because there is no game, but we will be back next week with a Wake Forest preview episode midweek. Pete, anything to add?
No, it is the opening season of youth basketball. So I will, if you want a podcast about that on Sunday, we could. But
are there any Freeman kids on your team?
Importantly. Yeah, no, there are not. Okay. There are definitely not.
So we'll I think we'll leave that be then. That is Pete Sampson of The Athletic. I am Matt Fortuna of The Inside Zone. Thanks as always for listening to The Independent. A reminder, you can download and subscribe and leave a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We also have a YouTube channel that gets lively in the comments section from time to time. Feel free to contribute and leave a nice comment and rating there as well. That's Pete. I am Matt. Thanks as always for listening to The Independent.